This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, who is our special guest today?
Our guest today is distinguished Toastmaster Jimmy Tai. Jimmy Tai speaks to a global audience on how he transformed from being known as one of the boat people refugees to become a Fortune 500 vice president. He's now living in San Diego, California. His Leadership Foundation Academy develops compassionate leaders to serve the less fortunate. And Jimmy's story was featured in the April 2016 issue of the Toastmaster magazine, an article entitled Compassionate Leaders Without Borders. And as Greg and I were talking about this the other day, I shared with you, Greg, that I love these stories where people are taking skills that they learned in Toastmasters and applying them to real world situations to make a positive impact. And in this case, with Jimmy, to help the education of children in Vietnam. And so with that, it is my great honor to welcome Jimmy Tai to the Toastmasters podcast. Welcome, Jimmy.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Greg. How are you doing today?
Excellent, sir. Very well. Jimmy, the spark of these projects that you've undertaken as an adult that we're going to be talking about today goes back to when you were a teenager and a relationship that you had with a young boy named Min. Can you tell us about Min and the unique challenge that you had in working with him?
Oh, certainly. When I was a young teen in my 16th, Vietnam at people full I were, this went through the fall of Saigon and, you know, the country savaged by the wars, and that's the living condition was pretty tough, and there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of chaotic. And then I tried to seek education elsewhere, and that's the main reason why I tried to leave Vietnam. The process of doing so, you have to get close to the fishing village so you can get on the boat and, you know, and head out to sea. While I was waiting for my boat, I got the chance to know this little boy while his parents harbored me for a few days leading up to my journey across the Thailand, Gulf of Thailand. I realized that even he 8 years old, but he didn't know how to read and write, and he's not unique at all. You know, most of the children in the poor village of Vietnam, some even today, they still don't know how to read and write because the infrastructure, there's no school, there's no teacher. So when I got the chance to know Min's a little bit better and taught him how to read from the used newspaper that his mom used at the wrap paper at the market, selling products at the market. I taught him every night, you know, and no electricity then, we just use the oil lamp. And he's so fascinated with learning, you know, that image never escaped my mind. Later on, fast forward, when I got a chance to left the country and came to the United States, that image, that voice, you know, that image haunted me pretty much for the rest of my adult life. So when I got the opportunity to be educated in America and got the opportunity to learn to speak and to learn to be a better presenter in the United States with Toastmasters, I said, what is the better way to serve, to give back, than try to reconnect with my country and build schools so I can help other people? Apparently, you know, Min today probably in his 40s or late 30s already. So it's hard for to teach him, you know, ABC. But I think kids in this neighborhood still have a vast voice that other successful, you know, people from Toastmasters can certainly come back and help. And that's the main reason why I decided to found the Leadership Foundation Academy so I can teach, I can raise a lot of money, and then donate all the proceeds to the Build a School program that we've been doing and we've been doing well.
I understand when you first came to the United States, it actually took you a while before you discovered Toastmasters. So what was it like when you first got to the United States, and how did your career take off after your education, kind of, again, before Toastmasters?
That's a wonderful question, because when you first get here, with no English skill, with no money, with no education. And I was 20 when I first arrived in the United States. So you focus on trying to gain a skill and make the living. In my mind, there's no way in my mind I thought I could become a trainer, speaker in English, not in Vietnamese, right? So I started out as an engineer, learning technical, I became an engineer, electrical engineer, and then I worked in the technical field. So you know the background at the Asian American, working in a technical field as an engineer, I don't have a chance to get out and talk much. And I get by with, you know, we call broken English. Then I got my master's degree and I get upper in the corporate ladder. I still have the disadvantage of Vietnamese American and Asian engineer that not communicates well. And that's when I start realize that unless I want to change, I want to improve my public speaking, I'm not going to go anywhere in my career. And that's where I discovered Toastmaster. And then, you know, like I said, the rest is history. And now I just can't stop talking.
So how did you actually find Toastmasters? What was it? Did someone introduce you to it? Did you see an ad? How did you find it?
I remember I still worked for the U.S. Navy Bay War Command at that time. And I was finished up my master's degree already and start thinking about how I'm going to get to the next level. And I was thinking about either go get my PhD in electrical engineering or go get an MBA. Right? And I leaning toward the MBA. And I went to the MBA school in San Diego here and tried to apply. And they look at my credential. They say, hey, you're an engineer. You have a master's degree, but you don't know anything about business. And your English is not that good. How can you survive in the MBA school where you have to do so many presentations? And they mentioned about, have you ever heard of an organization called Toastmasters? And I said, what's that? You know, I have a toaster in the kitchen, but they say, no, that have nothing to do with that. And then they say, oh, U.S. Bay War, they even have a club there. Why don't you call somebody there and ask to visit, attend a meeting? And I did that because I said, hey, I really want to go get the MBA because I think that would be my next ticket to upper management. So I went to the local Toastmaster club meeting at Bay War, and I still belong to that club until today. I sat there and I look at it. I say, oh my God, all white American people spoke perfect English and they in here learning. So why not me, right? So I joined right away. I say, hey, I'm sold. Where do I sign? How much money you want from me? I just give you the check. I just say, hey, I sold with this. That's probably one of the most important decisions that I make in my life.
So then, I don't know how far after it was that you joined Toastmasters, but at some point after you started speaking professionally, how did you make that transition?
When I left the government as the engineer and I joined the private sector, and this happened in around 2005, and if you remember 2005, that's right after December 26, 2004, right? That's when the Indian Ocean tsunami happened in Indian Ocean. And unfortunately, you know, it kills almost 250,000 people in that region. So I worked for this technology company and we pretty good at looking at the solution and the problem, try to come up with a solution. So I worked together with my business team and we look at it, we say, hey, there's a voice in that part of the region, right? The Indian Ocean or the neighbor country, Africa. They don't have the tsunami warning system. So what can we do to help these people? And then we start working on a prototype. We collaborate with NOAA, with the government agency. And then we got our prototype built within 6 months. Deploy it, test it out, everything worked great. The word get out and I start getting a lot of phone calls. And one of those phone calls is from Vietnam. They say, would you come back and help us understand, you know, how to prevent tsunami, how to prevent forecast earthquakes and things in that nature. And in 2007, I make the first official trip back to work with the scientists of Vietnam. Along the way, we start having personal conversations. And I said, you know what, when I left Vietnam, all I really want to do is come back and build schools. And a lot of people say like, hey, you here on official business, let's focus on, you know, working to solve bigger issues here. But mm-hmm. I could share my personal story over and over and over when we go out to lunch or dinners. It rekindled my passion and the promise I make to Min, you know, silently way back when I left. And that's how I start talking to more people, drawing more connection, how I can go back to Vietnam and big school.
As you're speaking, I'm still picturing Min when you first opened the story. And of course, Ryan and I had previously read the article. I can still picture him. I don't know what he looks like, but in some ways I see a silhouette of him and that image that seems to be ingrained in your brain.
You are so right, because even I sat there and speaking with you and Greg, I still imagine the little boys, the 8 years old boys that sat right next to me, and you know, his fingers still trace every single word on that crumpy piece of paper.
So how did you get started building those schools?
In 2015, after 3-4 years of you know, speaking and talking to a lot of different communities in Vietnam, because organizations start hearing about, oh, this Vietnamese American coming back and try to teach the American way, how to be confident in front of the people, how to run better business, and how to motivate people. And I start teaching a lot of the courses. I ran into this student in May of 2015, and she came to me after the class and she said, teacher, they call you teacher at the side of respect, even though you're just an instructor for a course. Teacher, I do have the similar dreams, and I have to know quite a few people that we can do this together. And I have helped out a few similar projects already. And I just like, great, why don't we start? And we sat there, and since I just, you know, very trained, disciplined in the art of project management and leadership, we say, let's map out a game plan. Let's talk about budget. Let's talk about who's the people that can get it done. And let's talk about all the pros and cons. So we map it out really quickly. And I took off just a couple of days back after our initial conversation. I flew back to United States. And we keep in touch and we keep email back and forth with each other about the details. And then she told me, yeah, teacher, it's a 3-classroom school. We can build this for about $10,000. And I said, okay, 3-classroom for $10,000. We certainly can do that. And I say, how much do you want from me? And she say, $10,000. And I say, sure.
All of it.
All of it. And I say, well, you know what? What my teaching is all about collaboration, right? So if I give some, I like to see the Vietnamese side give some as well. And she say, oh, okay. Then you want me to do some of that? We can ask the people to help out. And at the end, I provide more than half of it, and she be able to raise local funds from organization, from parents, and from other folks in Hanoi. You know, the people are a little bit well up than the poor village that we try to build school. And we say, okay, let's put on the calendars, and they get thing going. I send the money home to the Office of Education and Development. We strictly dealing with, you know, government agency here, because you know that there is the process. You got to get the permit. You get the right people. You got to do it right. You run it exactly like a project, because to me, that is a project. And we give them a start time, the deadline, the budget. And we say by this date, we need to have it done. And I already know that I'm going to be back there in late August, which is about 3 months later, because I already have contract with different companies to come back and teach. So I give them a deadline and they say, yes, they can execute this. They can get it done. Lo and behold, toward the end of August, I came back. And then we just took the team to go there, grand opening the school.
Nice. That's awesome. It's funny, Jimmy, because, you know, you tell a story like this. And I think for people listening, they think, oh, well, that's great. You know, they had this idea to open the school, and then they just got together and boom, they did it. and it can sound very easy. But I know this was not an easy process, and there were lots of challenges along the way. Can you talk about what some of those challenges were?
I think in my mind, as an executive, I never, ever let anything get in the way, right? So I think that's the spirit of Toastmasters. And I really want to bring that point out, because in Toastmasters, we are trained to overcome obstacles. And I forever am grateful for that skills and that mentality I learned from Toastmasters. And my life experience is nothing but overcome obstacles from, you know, overcome the language barrier, to overcome the cultures, you know, shock, and overcome the financial hardship. So I'm prepared with all of that, and coupling with the skills that I learned from Toastmasters, how to share a story, how to talk to people, how to raise funds, how to go out and start running things, you know, timely, like in the meeting. So a lot of these skills help you build you up. So you're absolutely correct that we have so much challenges from the aspect of, hey, how can we get the permit to go do this? How can we talk into people that we can negotiate the pricing down? Because this is a volunteer effort, right? This is a charitable effort. We cannot just expect people to try to go in here and try to make a profit out of this. And how do you motivate the local, hey, this is something we do for your school. I mean, for your children, you need to donate a day or two of your labor and come help out. So there's so many skills that involve. And yes, I'm simplifying the process to encourage people to go out to achieve their dream, even though it took 31 years in my case. But the reality is that it's a lot of obstacles, and we need to anticipate these obstacles. And that's where to have a disciplined project management and execution skills will become pretty handy. And we learn all of that from Toastmasters. People might not recognize it, but as you attend club meetings regularly, as you take on leadership roles, and as you know, try to network out with, you know, with other clubs, other districts, and other, you know, international office headquarters, you start learning a lot of these skills, and they all come in together. And I think that the very, very valuable skill sets from Toastmaster that I just want other members to recognize.
It sounds like a high performance leadership project that you did from 10,000 miles away.
it's a very good way to summarize it. Yes, it's nothing but, hey, this is a leadership, high performing project. I need high performance skill people. I need really detailed planning, and I need to look at every single aspect of it. And I really think you hit the nails right on the head when you mentioned a high-performing, you know, leadership project, because at the end of the day, to me, this is just a project, right? And we get it done, and not only we get done three projects like that last year, we just did a fundraising 2 weeks ago, and my goals were to raise $20,000 to build three more schools. And we raise over $28,000.
Wow.
And nice. I'm on track to build seven schools this year.
Wow. I think that the article mentioned, I believe, three more this year, but you're up to seven. That's incredible.
Yeah, the three schools that you mentioned in the article, I'm already funded it. So all those three are underway. And we just talked about, we are in, you know, today, just the first day of April. I still have nine more months, and I certainly know that in nine more months, with my passion, with the compassion from my team, we can achieve more.
You are on a roll.
Yeah. Jimmy, in the article, the passion meets compassion philosophy, that line really stood out for me. Can you break that open for us?
Yes, I love that, because that's a motto of Leadership Foundation Academy, because I really believe without passion, you cannot really achieve much, right? And that's the challenge that I see a lot of Toastmasters members. I mean, they might still go to the club meeting. They still, you know, do every single thing that we ask them to do. But if you lack of passions, that will not take you to the next level. So that, to me, that's very important. Everybody come to me, ask me to mentor them, to coach them. First of all, I want to make sure they understand, you know, there must be a passion. And people keep asking me, hey, what is it and how can I find my passion? The answer is very simple. What are you willing to do for free, right? I'm willing to build school for free, because that's my passion. That's what I love to do, right? And the next step is that a lot of folk come to me and ask, hey, can you train me to be a Fortune 500, you know, vice president, executive? Yes, I can. No problem. I can mentor you. I can coach you. But then what? The question is always, then what? So what? After that, what is that going to do? Right? Somebody wants to earn $300,000 a year. Great. But how much of those you going to reinvest in the society? How much of those you going to put back in a community? How much of those you going to pay forward to the people that already help you get you along the way, right? In terms of repay them. And that, the compassionate side of it, because when you get an opportunity to travel the world and see all the parts, when the people average live on $2 a day, right? I met so many kids in Vietnam that, you know, they 7, 8 years old. They have a long machete that they go and they just whack, you know, bamboo shoots so they can sell at the market to make a living, right? A lot of parents tell me, hey, I can't afford to send my children to school. I need them to provide labor to help me raise a family. And that's the part that's always, you know, break my heart to see kids that have no basic education, because then how are they going to help themselves, right? I can't go back and feed the poor or feed the homeless, feed the elderly, you know, make cook meals and do all the things for them. But how many of those I can help? But if I build a school, if I invest in education and let them educate themselves, give them a skill set that they can help themselves, I think that would be a lot more return on an investment. So that's why when I train and when I teach people, the key is that I say, I will bring out the passion in you. But when I bring out the passion in you and help you be successful, I want to make sure you have the compassionate side. Because if you don't, right, if you don't have the compassionate to give back or to do things for the other less fortunate, then I'm not the right coach or the right trainer for you, because that's not who I am. That's what, you know, Leadership Foundation Academy stands for.
That's awesome. Now, have you had the chance to go back and visit the schools that you've opened?
We plan to do that on June 27th of this year.
On June 27th of this year. And
yes.
What do you think that'll be like, and what are you looking forward to about that?
I think it's twofold, right? First of all, we're going to open the school number 4. The project number 4 in our project would be the sister school in that same commune, because now they have more children and now we attracted a lot of more kids. And they say, wow, teacher, we crowded for this demand here. So we really need you help us with the second school. It's just about, you know, 15 minutes, you know, drive, but maybe 2-hour, 3-hour walk from there. So we will open the project number 4, that's a school nearby. And I said, yes, I want to come back. I want to take a look at this school, because sustainment is something that some of those concepts, they don't understand yet, right? So you help them, you put up, you build a school, and then they not be careful, they will run down, and then 4 or 5 years later, the whole thing is just falling apart. The part of the teaching that we want to make sure is that they have to understand the sustainment piece of it. That means you have to take care of it every month, you know, you repaint it because the humidity and you know, a lot of condition in the tropical country can ruin a school really quickly if you don't pay attention. And I think that's the second part of it, because I have so many requests right now. On the average, you know, every day I have 2-3 requests for building schools and you know, or renovate existing schools. And the concept of sustainment, concept of maintenance is not there yet. And I want to make sure that people understand that we need to keep up with these facilities, because I want to make sure they last for decades.
I was going to say, it sounds like the skills that you learned in Toastmasters has not only helped you fulfill a childhood dream, it's taken it sort of way beyond that. Just to put you on the spot, if you could pick one element of Toastmasters that you think really, really helped you in your journey, what might that be?
Actually, if I have to pick one most important skills that I learned from Toastmasters that helped me along the way, from both my professional, my personal, and my compassionate side. And that's an interesting question, because I like to take a 10 second to say, parallel to what started Toastmaster, I started an MBA program, right? So after 2 years, I got my MBA degree. And a lot of people say, wow, you changed so much. Now you're so much better in front of the people when you speak and everything. But I say, you know what, guys? I credit all of that to Toastmasters training, not so much about the MBA. MBA is just the venue for me to exercise all the skills that I learned from Toastmasters. So I do believe, you know, having the Toastmasters credentials or whatever award that you accomplished Toastmaster, it can go a long way and go really well with your professional career. But get back to your question, if I have to pick one, the discipline that you show up every week at your Toastmaster club meeting, that's the most important skill that you can develop. Because when you have that discipline to show up and work through, all the disadvantages in communication and leadership that you have not harvested yet, when you overcome that, everything else is just a piece of cake.
Well, that's not one that I would have thought of, but that's absolutely incredible. Jimmy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on our episode. I think that what you're doing, what you've done and what you're doing is incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, and just before we let you go, Jimmy, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about you and the Leadership Foundation Academy?
That's a very nice question. Yes, you can always visit us on site on our website at leadershipfoundationacademy.com. The phone number is 858-769-9090.
Jimmy Tai, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you for having me.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.